Society has produced the KWL Radio Show. This year, the reenactment will feature a roundup of the news, Westland history on parade, as the Willamette Flow soap opera, and more. Again, that's a live performance of the Westland Radio Hour, KWL 1956, on Saturday, March 16th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Youth Music Project, 2015 8th Avenue in West Lynn. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And this is KBOO Portland, your community radio. Coming up at 10, Linda Olson-Osterlin speaking with Colleen Rowley. And lots more. All day and all night, right through until at least 5:30 a.m. So keep it locked right here. Meanwhile, I am, as always, privileged, honored, as well as contractually obligated to remind you that support for KBOO programming comes from Darkside Cinema in Corvallis, open every night featuring independent, foreign, and art house films. The Darkside is located at 215 Southwest 4th Street between Madison and Jefferson. More information and showtimes available online at darksidecinema.com.
Across the evening sky, all the birds are leaving, but how can they know it's time for them to go?
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to KBOO Community Radio. That song was Who Knows Where the Time Goes. I'll get the author for you later, or the singer later. I misplaced that. But welcome to KBOO on International Women's Day. We're having a whole day of women-generated programming, and I'm so excited about it. I love being part of International Women's Day here at KBOO. We don't forget its roots, and we have lots of variety of how we as women express ourselves around that. When I knew that our IWD Day was coming up March 8th, I wanted to join it because I wanted to speak to my guest, Colleen Rowley. I wanted to speak to her for a long time because I've heard of her for a long time. She's a former special agent and legal counsel for the FBI, and she was a 9/11 whistleblower. And in 2002, she won the Person of the Year Award with two other women whistleblowers and the Sam Adams Award for the actions she took. And those actions were to reveal that there was information available that might have been able to stop 9/11, and it was ignored from the top. And so that's Colleen Rowley, and I'm very excited to have her. Welcome to KBOO.
Yes, thanks for having me, and happy International Women's Day.
Yeah, it's a great day. You know, and maybe we'll start out right there with you as a woman, because I think there's some very interesting things. One, you and I are from different periods in the culture, and I'm about 10 years ahead of you in that. And I already thought the FBI were really, really bad when you were thinking they were really, really great and wanting to join them as a young woman. I was thinking, oh, they're the worst, because there was COINTELPRO and, you know, Hoover, we knew about him, and I'd actually had experience of the FBI coming to close friends of mine's houses and their parents' houses, harassing them, trying to lie to them about what their children were doing and stuff. So I had a lot of bad, and you were, you know, an all-American girl, and you worked hard in school, and you went to college, and you first got a French degree and then a law degree, and you really wanted to join the FBI. Can you start us right about there?
Sure. And, you know, I think the 10 years difference is probably very key there, because COINTELPRO was essentially just over that period of time that you were describing, you know, where the FBI was seen as the boogeyman. And in fact, when I went to training in 1981, January of 81, the FBI was still recovering from that. And they would tell us, you know, you might be just doing what they call a background investigation for a judge or somebody who's nominated for some kind of public position, and you'll be knocking on the door. And because people already have such a bad impression of the FBI, you know, you may not even get the door open. Just ask them, you know, about their neighbor. And so that was, like I said, kind of a recovery time when the FBI was trying then to recover its quote-unquote Ephraim Zimbalist image from an even prior time. And so, you know, in a prior time under J. Edgar Hoover, of course, this is, none of this is true.
Yeah, it was the myth that we all grew up with. Yeah. We grew up with the myth that they were all great men who were doing the best they could for our country.
You know, it's funny how time cycles this way, because now I think with the mass media, we've come back with the same image of Robert Mueller as this great Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. type. You know, he's got the strongest integrity, and, you know, he's what do they call him, a iron jaw and all this, you know. And it's, none of that's true, by the way.
Yeah, but, and I want to get into that, because not at this moment, if you want to tell us a little bit more about Hoover, but because really that's what plunged you into your, he became the director of the FBI when you became aware of these of a terrorist, what you guys were, a terrorist suspect that you thought was very suspicious and was trying to learn how to fly jumbo jets, and you couldn't get the word up. But he wasn't the person in charge that you had to try to get past. He came in right after that. Is that correct?
Yeah, I can explain that. And
yeah,
just
go
let
ahead.
Me add to that, to the prior question, that the time period when I worked for the FBI from 1981 to 2004 was essentially a lull between the end of the Vietnam War and the COINTELPRO the era. And by and large, you will find that these kind of more, you know, surveillance intensive and repressive eras will always accompany wartime. And so during the Vietnam War is when all of that COINTELPRO was ramped up in order to go after protesters, etc. And it, of course, it ramped up also after 9/11. And my career was actually in that lull period when the FBI did correct the abuses from the COINTELPRO. There were strict Attorney General guidelines that were largely, you know, but were largely followed. That all went up in smoke after 9/11. And so I've been a critic of the FBI pretty strongly for a lot of the things that they've done, a lot of even official investigations showing that they overplayed, you know. Of course, the CIA, we know, torture. The FBI didn't go quite that far, but they did all kinds of things. So I just wanted to add to the prior thing.
Yeah, there. No, it's good. It's good context, because there really was a period where it certainly felt like a lull, whether it really was or not. And so let's take you to just before 9/11. You're not even an agent at that time. You've moved into a counsel position at the office that you were in Minnesota. Is that correct?
Yes, I was an agent for several years, worked in New York City, but we're still agents. Even if we're legal counsels, we're still a special agent. So
okay.
You don't lose it, but we do specialize. A lot of people can become pilots, or they can specialize on surveillance, and there's all different little niches in the FBI, but for about 13 years towards the end of my career, I had become the legal counsel in Minnesota, and the agents, the actual agents who were working on this case, they received a call from a flight school, from two different whistleblowers, in fact, at a flight school in Eagan, Minnesota, that they had the most suspicious student that they had ever seen. And so the agent was very astute, and they ran out, a couple of them ran out, and they did some legwork very quickly within a day. And they were so worried that this guy would fly a plane into a building that they took him into custody on August 16. So that certainly was before the FBI Director Mueller had come on. That August 16th was, we had an acting director at the time. And the agents then sought further search authority through the FISA court, and they asked for an emergency search. So, you know, I know people don't understand this, but because, you know, they always tell you they have to have all these extensive breakdowns of the prior laws, you know, under FISA and stuff. That was all, this was all a PR campaign about how, you know, we need to have widespread monitoring and surveillance and all of this. The truth is there was always an emergency exception to FISA. So if you had this life and death type situation, you could actually go to a judge and get it right away. But what happened was you did have to have facts and everything, but you could go to a judge. And the agent sent up the facts in a written declaration form within, really, I want to say by August 18th, they worked day and night for a couple of days. They sent out leads to France and to England. And the French verified that this French Moroccan that was trying to take flight lessons here, his last name was Moussaoui, and they verified that he was connected to a terrorist group. He had recruited people to fight in Chechnya, and if you know anything about Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda was aligned with the head of the Chechen terrorist group as well. And his name was Abu, let me think about his name, I can't remember it now, he's long deceased, but the two were entwined, both bin Laden and this other guy that was the head of the Chechen terrorist groups were like, they had fought together.
They
fight in different countries. And our headquarters disputed all of this. And they argued and they put the agents through the ringer, trying to tell them that there was no other Moussaoui in France. And I mean, I wrote this all in this memo. And there were reasons for that. There were some reasons for why this happened, and it's kind of complicated, one of which is there was a wall between criminal intelligence at the time, which no longer exists. That was one reason. But also it was simply due to career risk averseness, and because also they had not done a good job of sharing the information widely, even inside the FBI, let alone between agencies. That's the number one factor. The number one factor for why information was not acted on, or in many cases even read, the information about potential terrorist attacks that had been coming in, and this is what was covered up after 9/11. Of course, you didn't hear George Bush go out and tell the American people that we knew something was afoot. You didn't hear Condi Rice. In fact, Condi Rice went out and lied, and she said, here it is International Women's Day, and I'm criticizing Condi Rice, but you know there are many women in power that will lie, and they'll do what is expected of them to fit in and to wield power, and she certainly was one.
That was one of the things I was going to talk about. Let me interrupt you for just a minute and say our contemporary ones are Kirstjen Nielsen. She's head of Homeland Security, and I'm not remembering her name, Gina Haskell, head of the CIA. Both of those women, yeah, I think, have lied, I'm certain have lied to Congress and have lied to the public, and are on the side of things that I think are extremely harmful, like separating babies and having them in cages and torturing human beings that we think are terrorists.
Nikki Haley, the former ambassador, my opinion is she probably was the worst of the Trump administration. Now, if you go back to the Obama administration, in the Obama administration under Hillary. Now, this is kind of the funny thing, because people want to put these things on parties and they want to say, you know, oh, the Democrats or the Republicans. But in the Obama administration, Hillary Clinton had a top assistant named Victoria Nuland. And Victoria Nuland was the wife of the top neocon warmonger, Robert Kagan, who founded the project for the New American Century. And Victoria Nuland had worked, before she worked for Hillary Clinton, she was a top assistant to Dick Cheney. And you know what her mission was? Her mission was to topple governments. And she went out and she was involved in that whole coup in Ukraine. And so you can go through the different administrations, and if you go all the way back to Clinton, you had Madeleine Albright. Madeleine Albright said, oh, if you kill 500,000 children, it's worth it. I mean, so many of the women, Colleen, let's talk about this.
So, you know, because I, you know, feminists certainly, let's talk about just this a little bit, and we'll get back to Mueller. But this is International Women's Day, so we can spend it a little bit on this. You know, is I have always felt that it did not necessarily make a difference whether I had a colleague who was a male or a female in whether or not I would experience them as oppressive or not, say if they were my boss, that it could be a woman would be the one I experienced oppression from and a man could be the one that I experienced an easy, just working relationship with. And so I knew, you know, that, and of course we know that we are humans, though we respond differently. Men and women are both humans. And it seems to me that we get caught up in our identity politics, and I'm saying this on IWD, you know, we think because they're a woman, they're going to be better. They're going to do a better job. Now, maybe men don't think they're going to do a better job, but most women I know think that the women are going to do a better, more thorough job, and that they're going to want to be less violent. But I don't think that that proves out to be true, and I think that's where the limits of identity politics come in. We're all really, you know, I find that I like to watch women's basketball and I like to watch women in the Olympics, but I never like to watch men doing those things. We all have our prejudices and preferences in terms of that kind of thing. But I think that we need to face that the identity of a person is not going to determine how they're going to act politically or within their job.
Yeah. You know, if Juliet Ward Howe had invented Mother's Day for Peace, and I think if you want to point to someone who kind of was at the start of this myth that women, because they're mothers and they're kinder and gentler, they're more nurturing, and that is if women assume positions of power, this is kind of how the myth went. If women assume positions of power, they will get peace. We'll get more peaceful relationships. Okay, and that goes all the way back, you know, probably 100 years. And I have, you know, when women, my generation, I'm 64, and when my generation did start to, number one, get into men's typically male occupations, like FBI agent or...
Yeah, I always felt so conflicted. I would be happy that women broke into the field, and then I'd be unhappy that a woman was being one of those. So, you know...
Exactly. And so when my generation first broke into previously male-dominated jobs, and then secondly, this is even the more important part, got power... And of course, you can look at the women, the top women in the United States, but you can look internationally as well. And when these women, like Madeleine Albright at the time, she was the most powerful woman thus far in the country. Hillary Clinton, of course, was another one. But then now we've had quite a number. You know, we've had a whole group of them. And by and large, almost all of them, the power corrupts that person, as opposed to the woman or the person then having an impact on the power. Now, you can't argue that when there is full equality, and when women now are, you know, there's full equality in power, that then will dissipate, and women will not feel like they have to make up for being more ruthless, more brutal. You know, I have to, you know, look like I'm tougher than the man. And I have all kinds of stories, even from FBI training, where, you know, nice people. They were all nice, but they got into these positions where they felt like they, you know, had to pretend that they could beat up somebody.
Yeah.
And I saw this over and over. And the truth was, in many of those cases, the woman, because she was trying to make up for what she felt was already perceived weakness, frankly, was worse than the man, worse. And I think that it does apply to both Hillary Clinton and Madeleine Albright. Some people don't know this, but during when Obama was on the fence about bombing Libya, his own defense secretary, Gates, a male, national security advisor, a male, I forget his name now, but there were three males, top males like Gates, that were all opposed to the U.S. bombing Libya and taking out the Gaddafi and the Libyan government. They all were arguing against it. But Hillary Clinton, Susan Rice, and Samantha Power all prevailed. The three women were the ones who were able to overcome the men. And you know what happened? They killed so many people in Libya, and basically the whole Libya, country of Libya now, they're doing slavery in Libya. I mean, they have ruined and destroyed that country. And that was women who did that. They even prevailed over the men. So that's what I was talking about in terms of getting this power. And, of course, maybe we can have some hope if there was full equality, that the women would not feel this need to pretend that they're twice as brutal and mean-hearted, etc., as the men.
You remember there was only one person, one soldier from Abu Ghraib in those photos that came out that actually had to go to jail for the actions they took. And it was, I think her name was Christy Eglin. And she was a young woman who was, the photos showed her holding a leash of a rope that was tied around an Iraqi man's neck. But out of all of the people that were there, and a good friend of mine said, they took one look at her and they said, oh, she was just trying to be one of the guys. She was just trying to fit in.
Exactly.
They said, I can just look at her and see it. And she had the most horrible time, you know, we know of others recently who have had horrible times in military prisons, but she had times in military prisons where she had to spend literally all day sitting at a table with her hands on the table in front of her, not reading, not speaking, not moving, not doing anything. Now, that's very clearly torture. And so I do think one of the things that I see a little bit is that when women step out of line, they get a little bit heavier flack for it. And they're more easily to be made to be the criminal that certainly her lover, who had staged all the photos and all the other things they were doing, should have ended up in jail as well, and he did not. I think what we have to do is pay attention to the policies that people have and not count on anybody's
Absolutely.
Gender for any particular type of behavior coming out of that. I do want to say that you were unusual for your times in that it was brave to set your sights on an area that didn't have women much in it, which was FBI. And also, you lived a little bit of an unusual marriage. You your husband stayed home, and you had four children during all of these years.
Exactly. Going back to the Abu Ghraib story,
yeah.
And by the way, and you mentioned Haspel, here the woman who was part and parcel of initiating that whole torture problem, and that did go down to the military, because the bosses, Rumsfeld, he told the military that they didn't have to worry about the Geneva Conventions.
Yep.
They were told early on. So I did want to say, I think Greener, her lover, did do jail time.
Oh, did
he,
Greener?
I thought he did, but maybe I'm mistaken.
I might be mistaken, too. I remember reading the only interview, it's Lizzie England, I think, that she ever gave, and I think it was in Marie Claire or something, a magazine that is like a fashion magazine, but it often has penetrating articles. And that was a very interesting, the writer was kind of a little horrified by her, because she would talk about the dog that they would hold, they would put a dog's head on a stake and run it around where they were and stuff.
Yeah.
And then a little while later, she was talking about the dog she has at home that she loves so much. And author felt she didn't seem to have any depth or grasp of of how deeply the problems were that she was in and what she had done. I also wanted to say, you know, you were talking about power being dangerous. And you have a little quote that's at the bottom of your email page that I noticed, and I wrote it down. It's, power is always dangerous. power attracts the worst and corrupts the best. And I really like that. That's one of the better statements I've ever heard about how power works. I want to let the audience know I'm speaking with Colleen Rowley. I should have reminded you of that a little while ago. I'm speaking with Colleen Rowley. She's a 2002 Person of the Year with two other women as a whistleblower by the FBI. She basically blew the cover off of that there had been our government and our intelligence agencies, including the FBI, were trying to say there was no way they could have known about this in advance. And Colleen Rowley knew that that was not true because agents in her own office had been trying to get information about one of the named terrorists up through the ranks and not been able to. So she told the truth to two congressional committees, I believe. And you did not experience immediate retribution for taking that brave action, is that right?
Well, the reason I did not experience retribution was because of the media. And at the time, Russer was alive, and he had, you know, this was big news on the media because there had been a cover-up going on for about 8.5 months. And so as this information came out in May of 2002, months after 9/11, it was making big news. There had been a flight school. I mean, there had been an agent who had warned that terrorists were training in flight schools out of the Colorado office. It was out west.
Mm-hmm.
And he had been ignored too. And then that information came out, and then slowly, little by little, things were coming out. And so the media was covering it big time. And that's probably, they forced Mueller to say at the time, Robert Mueller, that I wouldn't be fired. I think it was Russert. But Ashcroft, he was the attorney general, he refused to say whether I'd be fired or not. He kind of, made me
squirm for a while, hanging on the hook, yeah.
And that's why I asked for whistleblower protection, because I was kind of afraid that even if you're telling the truth, I didn't really know how bad it was. I kind of was naive myself. But it turns out that anyone, even telling the complete truth about something, is of a public safety nature. It could be something like Vioxx, a drug that's now been found to be giving people heart problems. It could be a dangerous substance like asbestos. I mean, anything like that. It doesn't matter. That's the part I was naive. I thought, well, if it truly is life and death, everybody then will believe in whistleblower. The need to tell the truth in order to avoid loss of life, or certainly things like fraud. Things like fraud are even of a lesser scale. If you find that there's somebody cheating,
right,
and you're the, some kind of Ponzi scheme or Madoff or something like that, well, that's, everybody's losing their life savings, so that's bad enough. But what about just if you have a situation where it's life and death? And I was naive. I thought actually that the powers would at least believe in whistleblowers to that extent. And I found out that wasn't true. And, in cases where there's a lot of PR, those people in power do not want the truth to come out. And they will do a lot of things, and certainly firing and quashing whistleblowers is one of the things. And by the way, I have a lot of friends who were actually prosecuted. I have, people in the NSA who told the truth about the massive surveillance. And that was Obama that did that.
Yes. Obama went after whistleblowers quite
whistleblowers.
Hard. Yeah. Well, let me, we've only got a few more minutes, and let me ask you one other thing. So given what you're saying about people in high places of power, and when something happens, they don't want it exposed and they will cover it up. So we've got Robert Mueller, and you said straight out, he's covered up, he instigated a cover up after 9/11 and has maintained that cover up. And so how does that come out? What do we expect out of this report? We thought it would come out this week. It has not so far. So this report that's going to come out, and you only have like 2 minutes to tell me, and then we have to say goodbye to you. I would love to interview you again once the report is out, actually. So let's okay. Set that up. But what do you expect out of Mueller?
Okay, well, for further background, for starters, you can read a couple of articles that I've written on Consortium News.
Okay.
I've written two articles, in fact, one with Nate Perry, Robert Perry's son, on, you know, this whole problem of trusting Robert Mueller,
right,
and putting him up on a pedestal like he's some kind of, like I said, Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. or whatever. It's simply not true. People forgot, my goodness, all those 12 years, he kept his mouth shut about torture going on. Why? Because he was, you know, he was working with the Haspel and all the rest that were doing it. And so, you know, you have to look at his track record, and he does not have a real good track record. As far as my prediction, it's only an educated guess, but I don't think they are going to find collusion with Russia, frankly, just because there's no evidence of that. There
yeah,
really
I don't
not.
Think they are. And
he's
I think everyone having us bet on that, that's not going to take Trump
right.
down.
The media did that. And, you know, I've got my fingers crossed that he won't go that far as the media has done making this stuff up. But on the other hand, he has done what I find very objectionable is he's used a certain kinds of entrapment and lying to the FBI tactics in order to try to move up the chain. And by the way, lying to the FBI was never even prosecuted when I worked. It was almost never prosecuted.
Well, and frankly, Abrams lied to Congress, and he and he's still up there. He's still in Congress. They're sending him to Venezuela. The tobacco companies lied to Congress, and they're walking away as well, and so did many people about the war in Iraq. So I think that they selectively choose who they want to take that lying to Congress about.
Corruption in Washington, D.C. is quite bad now. I know we'd like to think differently, but if they went after people for failure to register, so many of our revolving door politicians were violating FARA. But, you know, that's the problem. This is selective, and it's political. And Robert Mueller, he's been around the block.
Well, thank you for all of that. I think we need to end our program right now. This is Linda Olson-Osterlund for KBOO's International Women's Day. And we've been talking with Colleen Rowley, formal special agent and legal counsel for the FBI and a 9/11 whistleblower. She won the Person of the Year Award of Time Magazine in 2002 for that action. Thank you very much, Colleen.
Yes, thank you too.
And now we go on to more KBOO.